Good morning and welcome to the Roundtable and to our Roundtable panel. See, each day we start off with an open discussion of issues in the news and beyond, and why should today be any different?
I don't know.
Joining me for the discussion, WAMC newsman Ray Graff. WAMC's Alan Chartok will be here in a moment, as will Daily Gazette editor Judy Patrick. They're just finishing up their taping of the media project for this week,
yep,
which will air soon. So we look forward to having their presence in just a moment. It'll give us time to remind you that we love to hear from you. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our webpage or our Facebook page, or you can tweet us at WAMC Roundtable, at WAMC Roundtable. And it is, see, I told you they'd be here.
We ought to have a doorbell when they walk in while we're on the air. Ding dong, oh, who's at the door?
We're here.
Like it or not.
Well, good morning and welcome to the panel, and it's good to have you all here. Let us start with a story that that you led your newscast with, Ray, that I think is really a fascinating story. It gets into a lot of security issues, gets into a lot of different things, but Target confirmed Thursday morning that it was investigating a security breach involving stolen credit cards and debit card information for 40 million of its retail customers. That's, in case you need to know, is a lot of people.
That's a lot, and right at the beginning of the Christmas shopping season, and now at the end, whew, scary.
Target confirmed that its criminals gained access to its customer information on November 27th, the day before Thanksgiving and just ahead of one of the busiest shopping days of the year, and maintained access through December 15th. And they said that it confirmed that its online customers were not affected by the breach, which appears to have been isolated to the point-of-sale systems in Target's retail stores. One of the things that I found interesting in reading the story is I know that the Target is one of the stores, and I just know this through personal experience, but Target is one of the stores. A lot of stores do this. But you don't necessarily need a receipt if you want to return something at Target. If you go in with a card of which you received and you put that card in, they'll say, oh, you bought light bulbs on December 13th, and you want to return those light bulbs. We see that you've purchased the light bulbs. You can go and get the right light bulbs that you need. So that information is there, which brings up all these questions of, you know, did you sign on for that when you bought the light bulbs? And now there is that trust issue of, okay, and I'm not downing Target, because it seems like it could and obviously has happened to the big guys,
yep,
Visa, MasterCard, and others. So how do you make it safe and ultimately convenient for the shopper at the same time?
You know, Joe, I see a lot of stuff. I get up for that hour in the middle of the night every night, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, and I see a lot.
Your witching hour.
Yeah, and I see a lot of stuff that I'd like.
You're talking about on television.
Yeah, and they say, have your credit card ready.
Sure.
I say, not on your life. Not on your life. What, am I going to give you a credit card?
Well,
I mean, I'm totally paranoid about that stuff.
You know, and interestingly, okay, but I think all of us check that. I think many of us are concerned when we go, perhaps, especially a long time ago, we were concerned about going online and shopping and having our information out there. Interestingly enough, in this story,
it's there.
That was safe.
The online was safe.
You know, the online was safe.
But at the bank, when I go to get cash at a bank,
yes,
what happens is that inevitably they tell you to protect the screen. Mm. On the thing, it'll say, mm-hmm, protect the screen. So you're supposed to put your hand up, you know, and get close to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are people who really have all these scams. So it's brought a whole new technology for criminal behavior.
In New York, they have those I won't say shades, but they come up and around. So they
really
protect you. You can sort of look in. And
not at the bank I go to in New York.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. My branch in New York, the one I go to on 26 and Broadway, they have these little things and they go right sort of like over your. It's
almost
like a
like
cone of silence. Yeah, it's right. Exactly.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by that.
You know, I think Target's going to get criticized today, and justifiably so, because this has been going on since the day after Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
and we're just finding out about it now.
And it went on for 2 weeks.
I think, aren't there rules in place that they're supposed to notify? They're supposed to have a better, more on time check of what's happening and let people know as soon as possible, because these credit cards have been out there for a few weeks.
But well, I'm sorry. Well, no, it's through ahead. December 15th. I mean, today is the 19th, so and we found out about this yesterday. So this is 2 days old.
But it's not. It started in November 27th.
No, I understand that. But what I'm saying is that up until 2 days ago, this was still a problem.
Right.
But I think everybody who's listening who's been in Target wants to know, okay, you guys, stop talking. Just tell us what to do.
All right. Well,
what do you do now?
There's a number.
Oh, is there?
And Target says it happened, as I said, between the 27th of November and December 15th. Advises customers who suspect there has been unauthorized activity on their cards to call them at 866-852-8680.
So the first thing you would want to do,
is
at least
check
I would do,
check
is
your
go
account.
To your online bank account and see whether or not there has been suspicious activity.
And I hope that more than one person's answering that phone number.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Right. What is the phone number again?
Operators are standing
by.
866-852-8680 is the number that the AP reported. Oh. I have no idea.
And they're talking 40 million people.
Yeah. Well, and then they're telling you not to just check to see if there's been. They want you to check your account to see if there's been unauthorized
activity. And then call if you think there was unauthorized activity.
If there was unauthorized
activity. Yeah, they don't want you to call that number just for fun.
Just to see whether your card was safe or your card
right.
was compromised
exactly.
in any way.
But this happens fairly regularly.
Yes.
You read this kind of thing regularly, and you seldom see any real follow-through as to what the damage was. You know what I'm saying?
What the damage was in terms of
okay,
unauthorized
so
expenses?
Okay, so some major corporation says, oh, we've had a security breach and a million names have been stolen. And you read that on a fairly regular basis, and then you say, okay, well, I wonder what has happened. Whether any of those things ended up being a disaster, or whether when they announce these things, they don't come to much.
I'm wondering how much the banks and the credit card companies are complicit in this, in the sense of what their it seems that they have created an industry of security as well. And I'm interested in how all of that is playing out. I say this because I was recently on vacation. Before you go anywhere now, you got to tell the bank where you're going, because if they see a charge in different places. Well, if your plane gets diverted and you wind up in Atlanta instead of Chicago,
you're in trouble.
Then your car doesn't work.
Really? Is that right? Is that
even
what happened
in this?
To you?
Yeah.
Within the
No. In other words, if I have TD Bank,
right.
So I shouldn't probably say that, but I do. And
what's the
and,
account number?
And yeah. And when I go, I learn the hard way, because you get a message on your email that says there's been suspicious banking activity. Could you call the bank? At least I do.
Yeah.
And then you call them, and you call them from Ireland, or you call them from Italy, or wherever you are, or Barcelona.
Well, and what will happen is that, and this happened to me while I was away, is that you call them up, and you tell them you're going to be away, and you tell them your entire itinerary, and you call an international office, and you tell them your entire itinerary. And then for part of our trip, we were in London, and then part of it, we were in Paris. Well, when we went to Paris, we're sitting there, looking to get to pay for our tickets to get into the Louvre, and our card was declined. So now I'm on international cell phone charge with a half-dead phone, screaming at my bank, telling them I told them I was going to be, and I, you know, I won't mention the bank. But
why not? I did.
But it's the same one as Alan's.
Oh, jeez. You know, really.
So you have to call I never have to call the international office.
So then they told me, well, then you never reported it. So now I found myself using the foulest language I've ever used in my life in the atrium of the Louvre, and it just didn't seem right.
No.
To me.
But it was in English. So
that's right. It was English. And then the woman actually, it was so bad that the woman hung up on me.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Yeah.
We don't have to take that stuff.
I mean, whatever happened, I don't travel. I rarely leave the county. But does anyone use traveler's checks anymore? I mean, isn't that what they're for?
No, and I don't think they're accepted as widely as they used to be. It's a very good point, though. And this is all for our security. But then when I started to go through this whole process, and why I brought this up initially, is that then they start telling you about all of the security programs that you can buy into to make sure that your information is safe. Well, that there are various insurances that you can buy where they will cover anything. So if somebody does get your account information, then they will cover any
losses.
Experiences.
But don't they have to do that anyway?
I thought so.
Yeah.
I thought so.
Yeah, but then they ask you questions to make sure it's you on the phone.
That's right. So what is your mother's maiden name?
Yes, and what are the last three accounts? Who remembers what the last three debits that you had in your account?
Yes. They ask you what your last deposit or withdrawal was and the exact
amount.
I don't
even know my salary. So, you know, they say, well, how much, you know.
And then they ask you to ballpark it.
Yeah. I mean.
I don't know.
So all of this and then 40 million accounts can get broken into in a store, a credit card system at Target.
And I just wonder, so this brings up, and one of you made this, I believe it was Judy, made this very, very good point, which is, okay, so we didn't know until now. So has this happened at other merchants that we don't know about, that we're not being told, you know, where and does it happen? What are the reporting laws? What are the cases where they have to come to you and say, also, by the way, I would think they have all of your information. They have everything. They know everything about you in that. Why is it the media's responsibility? I mean, I understand why it's the media's responsibility to tell everybody, but you would seem like you did. You would get the email coming in and saying, look, we know you shopped at our store. You should be aware that this happened.
That's a good point. Charlie called.
Yes.
Wrote, and Charlie said, I've been hearing this story all morning, and I get that the data had been grabbed somehow between the swipe and the register, but no one is explaining how they did this at virtually every register at every Target. And now come the capital letters. Can you answer how, capital letters, they did this? Question.
I don't think that the Secret Service or whoever's investigating this is going to be too clear about that because they don't want others to do it as well.
We can say that, according to the New York Times, that the point of sale systems have become a major target for cyber criminals in recent years. By breaching point of sale systems, cyber criminals can gain access to the so-called track data on credit and debit cards that can then be sold in bulk on the black market and used to create counterfeit cards. That is the why. It still doesn't get into Charlie's direct question of how you get into that. But, you know, I don't think maybe we want to know.
Interesting.
The timing is more interesting because, you know, if I'm the Target executives, I'm saying, oh, God, there are 4 or 5 days of shopping left. This is a big time and a terrible time for this news to come out.
Yeah.
What are the reporting laws?
Yeah.
And I'm assuming they followed the reporting laws to a letter and announced it as late as they possibly could because this is not going to be good for sales, one would think.
No. And we also heard from Men's Warehouse, which says it's free express shipping days.
Ah, well, you're going to like the way you look.
No, they fired him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was the owner of the company, and they fired him.
How do you do that?
I don't know.
What? Oh, you mean a free?
The guy that ran Men's Warehouse.
This happens to be a fascinating story because, as you know, Joseph A. Banks.
Yes.
And Men's Warehouse have been trying to buy each other. I mean, literally. Buy each other.
Okay.
These are the main competitors. And one tries to buy it, doesn't work. And the other guy says, okay, now we're going to get even with you and try to buy you. It's amazing. These are billion-dollar businesses.
If Rosemary here, she would say, we're going off on a tangent, but I like it.
This is why I love this program.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
It's all fresh.
You know.
Slap.
We'll take a break. We'll be back. We'll talk about more fresh topics. New fresh hell after the short break.
Support comes from the Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butter scratch bakery, caterer, and cafe offering fair trade coffee. BlackSheepDeli.com. Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley, Kingston, presenting wellness education and weekly health and healing programs and support groups. Exceptional health care close to home. HAHV.org for dates and times. And Green Conscience Home and Garden, Saratoga Springs, New York, a green design showroom dedicated to healthy interiors with non-toxic flooring, wall finishes, beds, and more. Green-conscience.com.
Thank you.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel. We love to hear from you, roundtable at WAMC.org. We're going to go to a news break in just a moment, but let's go to another topic, and that has to do with data mining, somewhat similar to what we were talking about. A panel of outside advisors urged President Obama on Wednesday to impose major oversight and some restrictions on the National Security Agency, arguing that in the past dozen years, its powers have been enhanced at the expense of personal privacy. Again, we get into this issue of personal privacy. What information should be out there? What information should not be out there?
And should we know what's going on? I mean, that's even the bigger thing. If Rosemary was sitting here, she would be saying that Snowden's a hero because, as I've said so many times, you can't have democracy unless we know what the facts are. And you can't go into a voting booth and vote if you don't know that they're snooping in your, you know, in your accounts and everything else. So what are we entitled to?
The panel recommended changes in the way the agency collects the telephone data of Americans, spies on foreign leaders, and prepares for cyber attacks abroad. And this is all what's going on for the NSA. But I think we can make it into the broader topic of, okay, everyone has access to our credit cards, to our cell phones, to what privacy do we have? And ultimately, not even so much privacy, but security. And how do we look at that in this very technological age?
And where is there a safe path? What I mean by that is, let's just say, I'll make up a story. Somebody calls me on the phone.
Yeah.
And she says, do you have a few minutes to talk? And I say, talk about what? And she says, I can't tell you that because I can't tell you on the phone. But I can tell you, when I called her back, first she wanted a few minutes to talk. Then I said, I have a few minutes now. Now I can't talk to you on the phone, but I can write you a letter. How do we know that the letter, how do we know what's safe?
Yes. I think the only safe path is not to have credit cards, not to use cell phones.
And not to talk to anybody.
Stay at your house and not to talk to anyone. Yeah. Even the protections that they're talking about now, we really should discuss, are they enough?
Yes.
Did they go far enough? Is it enough to allow just one person in the review process? Is it enough to let the phone companies maintain all this data and let the NSA access it if they get an order? I mean, we really need to discuss.
What do you mean if they get an order?
Well,
believe that?
And if the order is legitimately obtained and the judge approves it.
By the secret court, which we'll never know about.
Right. Well, all those things really need to be reviewed. And thank goodness we're at least having this part of the discussion, and they at least had this part of the investigation.
Why does it always end up on us, though? Like, why is it that we never hear of the banks losing billions of dollars because somebody hacks into their account and taking the money out? My question is that we as a customer can go to the farthest reaches of Zimbabwe, use our Visa card, and have that money taken out of our account and not be able to use it in 5 seconds because there is a computer tracking system, although we can't figure out a way to accurately vote in this country. How does that work?
That is a brilliant question.
And you got 20 seconds to answer that. So
I think by asking the question, you've given an answer. Business. It's all business. Business is good. That's important. We protect business, but we may not protect the rights of individuals.
With that in mind, we will go off and hear some news from NPR, and we will be back with many other topics to discuss. We'll find out what's happening in the front pages and other pages of the Daily Gazette as well. We welcome your input, roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Judy Patrick is here of the Daily Gazette. Ray Graff joins us, our intrepid WAMC newsman. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
And Alan Chartok joins us as well, as always. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning.
It is great to have you all here. We welcome your comments as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let us talk about a new poll that has been released from the New York Times and CBS. Americans who lack medical coverage disapprove of President Obama's health care law at roughly the same rate as the insured, even though most say they struggle to pay for basic care. 53% of the uninsured disapprove of the law, the poll found, compared with 51% of those who have health coverage. A third of the uninsured say the law will help them personally, but about the same number think it will hurt them with a cost, with the cost of it being a leading concern. There is skepticism. I'm wondering, Alan, how much you think of this as education, of fully understanding what it's about.
You have answered, given my answer. I mean, I don't think there's any question that as the law kicks in and as the benefits are understood, more people are going to like it. But of course, if you don't know what it is, you're going to say, I don't know.
Yeah, people are afraid that they're not going to be able to get coverage, and they don't know for sure what's going to happen to them and their families.
Was that your impression of the average American?
No. Just a few people.
What were you saying? So, and
I think people are worried, they're concerned, and they don't know yet. And in general, people who, if you don't know and you're worried, you are going to be not supportive of this. But as this rolls out, I think you will see some greater support. We'll see, though. I mean, I'm not convinced entirely.
If it had been Medicare for all, it would have, you know, in other words, that the government was just going to pay. The Medicare program works extraordinarily well. And, you know, it's got problems, it's got issues, but basically it really works. It's simple. It's easy to understand. This was complicated, I think, accidentally on purpose. It was done that way.
Right. It certainly didn't work well the first month or so.
It was just too complicated. And Hillary's program, when she tried it, was too complicated also.
And let's face it, when you take a poll like this, there hasn't exactly been good press. So if you ask people about it, skepticism can't be far behind when all you've been reading for the past 3 months is how troubled the plan is, right? I mean, that seems to be a result of that.
No, absolutely. When I read those stories, I always get conflicted. I have the feeling that, again, it becomes a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy. I'm now seeing news stories in which they say the disastrous Obama program. I don't think anybody would have dared do that in the beginning. I don't think it's an objective term, but reporters become more and more daring as this thing goes on.
And what's interesting about the poll, at least I found interesting, was that it was the uninsured and the insured are both skeptical. And so do we add this to our list of things that we're skeptical of the media, we're skeptical of, we're skeptical of government, we're skeptical. There's
all for good reason, by the way.
Right. So
all for good reason. Why shouldn't anybody be skeptical of Fox News or of the New York POST or 700,000 readers every day? That's a lot of people.
You know, I like that approach, that people should be skeptical. You're right.
They shouldn't be uninformed. I mean, skepticism based on lack of information is hardly the same thing as skepticism once you know the facts. Ray, you look perplexed.
No, I just want to tell me what the facts are. Does anybody even know yet what the facts are? In other words, I think the insured are worried about this because they want to know, will the costs eventually come down for those who already have insurance? And so far, zero evidence of that.
Okay, but you know something. See, there's a good example. You know something. The real question is, if you take a look at the poll that Joe read us about who is skeptical, then I'd love to know what the people who responded, the third that responded, I don't like the program, what they know.
Well, that's the government's fault. Everyone should know by now what it is.
Well here's the thing another aspect, and I'll just read this again from the New York Times, and they're the commissioners of the poll along with CBS News. Of the uninsured who said that they were not likely to sign up by the deadline, fully half said it was because of the high cost. 29%, which I find to be a large percentage, 29% said they plan to go without coverage because they object to the government's requiring it. Now, that is, to me, they don't like being told that they have to do something.
They're doing this on principle.
This goes back to the seatbelt law. I wear my seatbelt. I won't want the government telling me that they have to wear their seatbelt.
Everybody is wearing seatbelts, and traffic fatalities are going down.
Right.
You know, it took a long time, but it worked. It worked, with the exception of maybe
Well, I'm curious as to why of that mentality of saying, and again, I think 29% is a large. I mean, we're almost talking about a third.
But I want to know about that 29%. I want to know what they know. I want to know what the question was. Do you think, are you not doing this because you think the price is too high? That's it.
What he said. It's a great point, and I don't know exactly how you detail and find out what they know and what they'll admit to knowing. But to me, as you said, Judy, of on principle saying, well, I'm not going to be a part of this because I don't want the government telling me what to do.
And I think the programs also need to be put into action a little bit. People want to know: is this test going to be covered? Is this when I get the blood test covered? Who's going to pay for it? Am I going to have how much of it I'm going to have to pay myself? Is my child's are my child's braces going to be covered? I mean, those kind of real nitty-gritty issues, as they come up and as they get addressed, I think that will help people make better decisions about what their health care coverage is doing for them at a particular point.
We should also point out, just in fairness, but the numbers have increased over in the 6 weeks since the poll, a very similar poll was taken, so the numbers are much higher, but they're still...
How much higher?
I think of overall supported the plan had gone from something like, and I just went away from the screen, but something like 36 to 47 or something like that.
Yeah, so it's what I said in the beginning. It was a brilliant observation. It's still a brilliant observation.
Your observation?
Yeah.
Oh, what was that?
Which is that people invest in it, as they get it, they're going to like it more as the advantages of the plan become plain.
Okay.
Or the disadvantages as well.
I agree. I think that's a brilliant observation.
There you go. That'll get a few letters.
Let's go to some things that are making news in the Daily Gazette, one of our one of journalism's finest.
Without question.
Well, thank you, Joe. So on today's front page, we have a follow-up story of the sad story up in Saratoga Springs. Last Thursday, a 54-year-old woman was found dead in back of the Senior Citizen Center. She was homeless. They're going to have a service for her today. A family member picked up her ashes at the funeral home earlier this week. Well, it's raised the issue of homelessness in general. And in Saratoga Springs, they are renewing their discussions about how they should deal with people who are homeless. I mean, Saratoga Springs is such an affluent community. It's hard to believe that, there are homeless people there, but there are homeless adults, there are probably homeless children there or teenagers. Some of these shelters, one of the issues shelters raise is, who do they accept? Do you have to be sober, for example? If you're drunk, are they going to take you in? And some shelters have rules about this, and the issues that need to be addressed is, will you accept everybody on a cold night? And how cold does it have to be for you to take everybody in? Cities like Schenectady and Albany have pretty good resources in terms of dealing with the homeless. But in places like Amsterdam, Gloversville, Saratoga Springs, Glens Falls, the smaller communities, even in rural areas, there are homeless people. And those communities just don't have those built-in resources. And it's something that it takes an incident like this for people to start talking about.
Yes. When, and obviously this is something that affects every community. I mean, certainly every community we serve, but every community in this country, I would think that has to deal with this, with the problems of people who fall through the cracks.
And what do you do, and how does it affect the system? So, for example, there will be people in Albany who will tell you on a regular basis, when the temperature goes down to a particular low number, there will be somebody who knows how to game the system, who will get out on the street and collapse on the street. The city sends the paramedics and the fire trucks. What else are they going to do? And they take you to a warm hospital, and then after a while you're out, and then you do it again. Now, are we better off having a system where people can go to a place than have to go through that kind of chicanery?
They're saying that there are more homeless people in New York City now than ever. And not all these people are hanging out on grates and in the middle of the sidewalk. A lot of them are hidden. You don't see them. You know, teenagers we hear of, they couch surf. They go from friend's house to friend's house, but they really don't have a place to stay. Clearly, they're not going to be out in the middle of the night freezing to death, but it's still an issue because they have a hard time getting educated if they don't have a home or regular meals. You know, it's a real issue in some places becoming more of an issue than it has been before.
Well, this is a very serious issue. It really is, and you know, I just read a letter from a guy. I am not going to read his stuff, but he says this is just a frivolous program, and we don't ever discuss anything that's serious. Well, we do all the time, and I just because we mix it up, and because we have a few moments in which we enjoy all of the people who are out there and each other here. It does seem to me that there are those people who just can't sort of, you know, accept that this is a mixed bag. I suppose I shouldn't have said that, but it makes me angry.
You know, and homelessness is such a complicated issue. People are homeless for such a wide variety of reasons. Some, you know, there are mental health issues. There are, you know, they can't get a job. They've lost their job. I mean, so dealing with it requires this really complicated approach. And so it's not just like opening a shelter. It's providing services that these people need to get back on their feet, or if they remain homeless forever, to effectively deal with them all the time.
And then there's always the mental health issue.
Right.
There are those people who are seriously mentally ill. They couldn't get a job if their lives depended on it. They couldn't do anything. We have basically said to our institutional hospitals, you know, that were around the state, you know, we're not going to have people taken care of in these places. We were supposed to have community mental health centers. We have a few, but nothing like what we should have. Those people add to the issue also.
The and of course we have the taking care of the problem as it stands now with the people, but also a prevention issue of making sure that we keep future people from in the future, keeping people from having to live on the streets and doing as much as we can. And I don't know that we.
But isn't that socialism? The answer is, of course it is. I mean, the people at the top have to do more to take care of those people who are really victims of the kind of society we have. There'll be somebody who says, the moment you do that, the moment you have pre-K, the moment you have this or that, it's socialism. And of course it is.
Well, prevention programs also help people help themselves as well.
Right.
And help them get out of the situations that they're in.
Some can, some can't. Some can,
and we'll avoid successful. The situation altogether. I mean, instead of at the fork in the road, take path A as opposed to path B. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue and talk about some other interesting issues. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Support comes from Tough Travelers, Schenectady, New York. USA designers and USA manufacturers of duffel bags, fanny packs, computer bags, briefcases, and more. TouchTraveler.com. Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, celebrating 30 years helping to place retired racehorses in adoptive homes and prison-based vocational training programs throughout the U.S. ThoroughbredRetirement.org. And Albany Marriott, with 359 guest rooms, special event and meeting space with internet access, the Market Restaurant and Martini Lounge, and airport transportation. Facebook, Twitter, or albanymarriott.com.
Welcome back to the roundtable. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's okay.
The cue there that we're actually timed to time to make the donuts. We're going to go on to some other topics that we want to talk about. Roundtable at WAMC.org if you want to weigh in. Was there anything else, another story?
There are a couple of people who have. Did you want to hear from them?
Sure.
Go? Okay.
No, you do that, and then we'll go to Judy, and then we'll go to our final topic, and then we'll be done with the hour.
Huzzah.
Okay. I'm an uninsured American, Massachusetts resident, 26 years old, avid listener of the radio station, fairly highly educated on the ACA. Don't like it because it's a huge handout to the insurance companies and don't provide genuinely affordable coverage. I think you guys are often dismissive of the level of economic struggle imposed on my generation. I still can't afford a coverage. I am not eligible for MassHealth, and ACA doesn't cut it costs enough. I pay the penalty. I also pay 25% in taxes because I'm a 1099. That should cover my health care. Single payer, nothing. I can't afford another opinion. Okay. So then Sydney says, so the people who don't like the government telling them to get health care if they get sick and end up bankrupt or disabled, then won't they look to the government to help them financially? How is that okay with them? And then, let's see. Then from, from somebody, Jim.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes or no?
Yeah.
Okay. Personal information and collection would not be better to create laws or how this information can be interrupted and disseminated. So we never have a McCarthy system interrupting the information. Also, I feel the responsibility of the individual to create a system that stops this information from getting into the system in the first place. There are systems being developed today that will give the power of privacy back to the individual. Let's make it private, but our attitude must change. It's not that I'm doing anything wrong, but it's the interruption of, but it's in the interruption of what you're saying. Oh, I see. That's from the same guy. Okay.
I don't know what any of that just meant.
Well, that's all right.
Okay.
Okay, me neither. Probably the way I read it. So,
all right.
Please look at the reg for the Federal Reserve. It's called Regulation E. It is supposed to protect consumers from authorized use of credit cards.
And if you Google it, he included a link.
It's a very lengthy document, but the first few paragraphs are a summary, and that's what I got.
All right. That's from the mailbag. Let us go to the other story you were going to talk about, Judy.
Hey, it's a fun story, but there's a serious issue behind this. This is a story from Western Montgomery County where a judge, a town justice, village court, was holding court. Man came in. He on a serious charge, I think it was possession of heroin, and the judge said he was going to revoke his bail, or he was going to set bail at $2,000. The man didn't come up with $2,000. He was going to go to jail. And the guy goes, does that mean I'm going to jail? And the judge said yes. The man turned around and headed out of court. The judge started running after him, tried to catch him, couldn't catch him. And the guy got away. The judge called the state police. Eventually he was caught at a nearby Stewart shop. But it raises the issue of security in these little small courts. The judge out there actually has a full-size cardboard cutout of a police officer that he puts next to his bench. And so that is the security for his department. The Office of Court Administration says there's no way.
We need that by the bus stop.
And that's all he has. I mean, he had that in there that night when the guy took off. The judge is 64. The man who fled was 29. So the judge was not able to catch him. But it's an unusual case where, the judge wanted to get his man, I guess, and eventually he did. He is in custody in jail, and he is due to return back to village court next week, but he will be accompanied by a sheriff's deputy.
Wow. And presumably not a cardboard one?
I didn't say that in the story. I hope not a cardboard one. But, a lot of these big cases, they start in village and town courts, and there are a lot of them in New York State, and paying for security there is expensive for the villages and towns, and they have to make these decisions. Do they all need a sheriff's deputy at every court case? Probably not. But
as I keep saying to somebody I know very well who leaves her car keys in the car, it only takes, it's never happened before. I say, well, it takes once. That's all it takes.
Yeah, that night in court, there was the judge, there was the defendant, and there was the court clerk. Were the only people. Very small room, a little town out in Western. I think it was the town of Palatine.
Yeah.
Our final story this morning, and I thought this was, it's a good story. It's the Federal Communications Commission. We call it the FCC.
We do.
On Wednesday, proposed repealing its blackout rule, which for decades has been the bane of sports fans whose ability to watch their favorite home teams on television has depended on whether enough of their fellow fans bought tickets to see it in person.
Yeah.
You see. So
that's just wrong.
The rule has prohibited cable and satellite television companies from showing sports games in areas where leagues or individual teams require that the games be sold out before they can be shown on television. Retracting the rule, which was adopted in 1975, so this has been going on for a very long time, would not necessarily prevent all such blackouts, the FCC said. Separate league blackout policies would remain in place for over-the-air broadcasts, though not for cable and satellite companies. If the repeal passes, the leagues would then have to negotiate with cable and satellite companies to keep those games off the air.
So, Ray, you're the big sports guy around here. What do you make of this?
You know, I was trying to think back. You know, as a Giants fan watching since about 1970, I don't know if I can ever – I know it was always a fear that they would black out the Giants game on Sunday, but I don't recall if they ever actually did, even back when the Giants really were bad in the early 70s.
There's got to be some economic discrimination here. I mean, people who watch television don't always have the immense amount of money it takes to go to a Giants game.
But what I think is more interesting is that the FCC would set this policy. Well, no, I mean, yes. But that the FCC would set this policy at all. The FCC, why would they be concerned with the commerce on the ground at a stadium?
And why do you think? Because these government agencies are all captured by the industries that they regulate.
But the industry can set the rule.
And I always thought it was an industry rule. I'm surprised that it's an FCC rule.
Yeah. And again, there are blackout rules that can go in small market areas. So if you're watching the Cleveland Indians and you're the station that runs the Cleveland Indians and you have the home game, you can't show the home game if it's not sold out. That is still okay under this provision. It's for these all pass packages on satellite and cable, from what I understand. Yes,
I think so. But yes. the baseball, the Indians wouldn't be affected.
Well, I mean,
there were games the Mets drew, 600 people, and it was still on TV
because they want anything they can get.
At least 600 people were watching on TV as well.
And each of them know that their chances of getting the camera to focus on them so that their people can see them at home would be greater.
Right.
How much does it cost to go to a major football game?
Hundreds of dollars.
Yeah, it's expensive. And if you have season tickets, and then you have to pay a personal seat license, at least for the New York teams, and I think for most teams, which is several thousand dollars. Now, I've been on the waiting list for Giants season tickets for decades. The day that they put the personal seat license rule in, which was, I don't know, 7,000, that's when they called me. I said, "You're kidding me. Now I am no longer able to afford this."
I don't get it. Well, you pay for the seat, but you also have
to pay for the right to have the seat that you pay for.
That's absurd.
Yes, it is.
Well, it's not. Yeah,
I never heard such a thing.
Well, it's not unlike.
It's business.
It's not That's unlike. Buying going into where you're buying a place in New York, and you're paying for the property, but then you have the maintenance fee of every month. That's pretty much what it is.
Oh, so you pay for the seat, but you're also paying for the maintenance.
Well, you're paying for the you have to buy the seat, and then you also have to pay for each game that you're going to.
Yeah,
that's absurd.
Well, yes.
That's why you watch it on TV.
That's right.
Or
if
not.
You can.
Or not.
Well. So we'll see what happens with the blackout rules. We always welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Any final comments from the panel this morning?
Well, Judy, my comment is it's wonderful to have Judy with us. Judy, thank you so much.
You know, it is nice to be back. Now I've got a lot of Christmas shopping to do. I've got this credit card, and I'm a little concerned about using it. Maybe I'll go get some cash before I go out
get
and
some
hit
cash
the store.
Out.
That's right. Be careful of where you go.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.